"You've been busy tonight," she said to me, her eyes on the creamer as she dumped it into the cup and stirred the swirls with a spoon.
"Just a little."
"Hey, I really am sorry. Your birthday." "So you had to kill a kid to make it up to me?" She smirked and added a big spoonful of sugar to her cup. "Don't joke about it, Kate. You know I didn't kill that kid." Kate smiled and nodded. "That I do. So don't just sit there with that stupid look on your face. Tell me what happened." We both ordered breakfast. Eggs, bacon, sausage, hash browns, and a short stack. And I told Kate about Phoebe, the mouthless man at the Sorbonne, and the van, and how I thought he'd snatched her. Then I pulled out the napkin. Her eyes lit up when I handed it to her, and she smiled a wry smile. "You recognize it?"
"Maybe.
It's kind of rough, the drawing, but it looks like the sign at the Rose Cafe on 3rd. I frowned. "The Rose Cafe?" I shook my head. I don't know it. Should I?"
"Not sure. Vice has been watching the place for a while, but so far nothing. At least that I know of."
"Who owns it? Do you know?" I asked.
"No, but it should be easy enough to find out. Are you thinking it might have something to do with your kidnapping?"
"I'm not sure it is a kidnapping. Turn it over."
"Time to come home," she said quietly. "So, the kid's a runaway, then?"
"That's exactly what I was thinking, but..."
"But you've got one of those crazy gut feelings again, right?"
"Well, yeah, but it's not just that. It's also who she is. Where's home and who wants her? Not her dad, that's for sure. You know, that kid told me Phoebe's father sold her to... Hell, I don't know, not yet, but I will. For protection while he's inside. If he did, then she's in big trouble. Forced prostitution. The dead kid... His name is Stitch, said something about an army. I guess he was talking about some sort of gang.
Trafficking, she said, looking up at me over the rim of her cup. I'm not surprised. Vice has been all over that problem for a couple of years. Nice, just what we needed around here. Did you talk to August like I suggested?
No, but I will. Was he involved in the Marsh case?
He never mentioned it.
I don't think so, but he's into that world. I hear the feds are about to make a move on Bernie Madoff. Same deal, Ponzi scheme, though on a much bigger scale than Marsh.
Yeah, I heard about Madoff, I said. Who hasn't?
I'll talk to August first chance I get. In the meantime, I need to find the girl.
She nodded.
So what's your plan?
I don't have one. But she drew that thing on the napkin for a reason. I guess I'll start with that. I'll go by the Rose Cafe in the morning and check it out.
It's already morning, Harry.
The waitress came by, refilled our cups, and took away our plates.
So, how's the new partner? I asked.
Kate shifted in her chair and gave me a sour look. I knew that look well. It was the face she made whenever she disapproved of something. Glad this time it was somebody else besides me.
That good, huh?
No, he's that bad. Look, it's my birthday. Can we talk about something a little lighter?
Almost as if she was listening in, the waitress came to the table with a piece of apple pie topped with a glowing candle. I'd managed to slip her a note along with a 20 when she took the plates, saying it was Kate's birthday and asking her to do something nice. The waitress, singing her heart out off-key, God bless her, set the plate of pie in front of Kate. She cocked her head, gifted me with a sideways glance, took in a breath, and gently blew out the candle.
"Okay, you're forgiven," she whispered. "Sorry I was a bitch. I thought you forgot my birthday.
I didn't know you'd been dealing with this crap all night.
I didn't have the guts to tell her I forgot. Hurry up and finish your pie. We can go back to your place, and I'll give you your present. She knew exactly what that meant, and downed the apple pie with just a couple of spoonfuls. Less than 30 minutes later, we were at her apartment, and everything was right with the world. For a little while, at least. I'd be some kind of dope if I ever let this one go, I thought, as I lay back and closed my eyes.
Chapter 6 I woke around 5:30 the following morning, Thursday. My shoulders were sore from all the tension. They get like that now and then, especially when I'm dealing with a complex case. I rolled over and spooned Kate, who groaned a little and snuggled back into me. Nice. I may never get out of this bed. I eased myself up onto my elbow and gazed down at her. Her eyelids fluttered, and I couldn't help but wonder what she was dreaming about. The ride back to her place the previous evening was enlightening, let's put it that way. She wanted to talk, and she did. She was running her first murder investigation as lead detective, and it wasn't going well. The major problem was her new partner, and I could well understand why. I knew the guy, not well, but I'd run across him during investigations of my own. He was a vice cop then. It suited him. It suited his personality, and he was used to doing things his way. But that wasn't all. He seemed to have an inside track to Assistant Chief Henry Finkel, and that wasn't at all good. Kate didn't like to talk about it, but I knew what was going on between her and Tiny. I'd even offered to do something about it, but she was having none of that. "If he needs a kick in the teeth," she said, "I'm quite capable of handing him one." Anyway, apparently Dick Tracy, it was a nickname that had come with the job back when he was still at the academy, had been undercover far too long, and, as I said, he was used to doing things his way. Detective Dick was also a misogynist and didn't like to be told what to do by a woman. And Kate, I promise, was and still is some kind of woman. He couldn't have run up against a tougher one and was bound to lose. She could hold her own against any man. Even so, I felt bad for her. She loved her job and took it seriously. Nobody could match the level of commitment and honesty she brought to the force. She put a lot of pressure on herself to pick up the slack when somebody screwed up or just didn't care about what they were doing. Public servant to her meant serving the public, and she wouldn't give any less. Her eyes opened and she looked up at me. "You know, it always wakes me up when someone's staring at me." "Oh, yeah, and how many people have been staring at you when you're sleeping?" "Only you," she said, closing her eyes and wriggling her butt into the spoon. I kissed her, and it felt the same as it did every time. Heavenly. "Don't go to work today," I whispered. "I'll take you to lunch." "Let me guess, the Rose Cafe?" "She's a sharp one." "Come on, it'll be like old times, the two of us working together again." "You left the force, Harry." "I didn't. Somebody's got to hold down the fort." She was barely awake, but already thinking about Tracy. "Besides, you've got a new gig." "Oh, yeah? What's that?" "Private investigator." "What? And she says I'm frickin' psychic?" She rose up onto her elbow, grabbed the sheet as it fell before, well, you get the idea. "Think about it, Harry," she said earnestly. "You'd be your own boss. No Wesley Johnston forever on your ass. It's you, Harry. Think Mike Hammer. I could be your Velda."
"That would mean you'd have to quit your..."
"Forget it," she interrupted me. "Find some other Velda.
I'm staying put. I'll be Captain Pat Chambers.
Captain? That'll be the day. You're just a sergeant.
Okay. Sergeant Chambers, then.
I'd much rather you just be my Kate Gazzara. I kissed the tip of her nose, each eyelid in turn, then her lips. I lay back down, my hands behind my head, and closed my eyes. You seem to know a lot about Mike Hammer, I said. How come?
Something you don't know about me, Harry, is that I read a lot. I love Mickey Spillane.
I thought. I kind of like the idea. Mike Hammer. Huh. Could be fun. I really hadn't thought about making the PI thing official. It was just a ploy to get Stitch to open up. But she may have something. I sure as hell need something to do. And this Phoebe Marsh thing might just be my way in. I continued to think about it.
Damned if it wasn't a good idea.
Yeah? She asked, smiling. I don't know. I've never run a business before.
Lucky that you know someone who can help.
Terrific. Are you going to quit the force and come work for me?
Would that ever be a dream come true? I was talking about Ronnie, you nut. Wasn't he a business major?
Yeah, he was, is. Maybe I'll give him a call.
Later, big boy, she interrupted me. I haven't finished with you yet.
It was almost 7 when we finally rolled out of bed. We had coffee together and then went our separate ways, Kate to work and me back home to shower and change into clean clothes. I was a mess. My rain-soaked duds had dried out overnight, but were splattered with blood from my nose and half the contents of Goliath's fat mouth, speckles of chew and snot. I must have looked like I'd just crawled out of a dumpster, and I had to wonder how Kate could even stand to look at me, much less sleep with me, looking the way I did. She called me while I was on my way to the condo. They'd found Goliath, the big dude that shot the kid. His name was Joseph, Jojo, sometimes JJ, James. He'd denied having anything to do with it, and of course he had a rock-solid alibi for the time of the murder. He was at the movies with a half dozen of his buddies. I expected that. If nothing else, thugs are predictable. I parked the Maxima on the road outside the condo, and as I walked up the front steps, I noticed that the front door was open, just a crack, but it was enough to raise the hair on the back of my neck and for me to grab the Smith & Wesson from its holster. I mounted the steps, gently pushed the door open with the barrel of the gun, and took a step inside. The guy appeared out of the kitchen doorway. I had the weapon up to his face and, "Harry!" August yelled as he dropped the empty grocery bag and flung both hands in the air above his head. "It's me! Don't shoot. I was just bringing bagels." Yeah, it was my dad. He was scared out of his brains, and I didn't blame him. Even so, a thought popped into my head. Wow, if only all those people he'd sued and taken to the cleaners could see him now. August Stark is one of the toughest and most honest attorneys in the business, with a tort practice that has gone after some of the biggest companies in the world. His name would bring shudders from any corporate lawyer who had to face him in a courtroom. "You silly old man," I said softly, stunned with the enormity of what had just happened, and thought of what could have happened. With pistol still in hand, I threw my arms around him and hugged him. "Damn it, Dad, I could have killed you." "That's enough," he said gruffly, and pushed me away. He took a step back, brushed an imaginary speck of dirt from his shirt, picked up the bag, motioned for me to go on in, and then closed the door.
"I didn't see your car," I said, holstering the weapon. "Where is it?"
"It's parked across the street." He turned, looked at me, and said, "You're not looking so good, Harry. You should go beg Wesley Johnston to take you back. You're not cut out for the easy life. Would you like me to have a word with him for you?" "Not in this life or the next," I said. He looked sharp in his usual Thursday morning golf attire, black shirt, accented by a gold chain around his neck, white slacks, and a pair of white Golf Street shoes. He always dressed well, but today he looked particularly good. "You playing this morning?" I asked as I followed him into the kitchen. "Of course. 9 holes with the mayor and that new district court judge. I shall, as they say, take them to the cleaners." My old man was worth more than $200 million, but he loved squeezing his pals on the golf course. Never for more than 10 on the match and $5 birdies. He said it kept them honest. "The bagel shop was busy this morning," he said, "but not too busy to make your favorite breakfast sandwich. Fried egg, bacon, cheese, and all the grease you can handle. Disgusting. How can you eat that crap, Harry?" "Just the way Nana used to make 'em," I said as I took off my jacket and holster, hung them both on a chair at the kitchen table. I grabbed the wrapped sandwich, peeled away the paper, held it to my nose, and inhaled the intoxicating aroma. "How the heck do they get the egg to taste so good?" I said, more to myself than to my father, as I unwrapped the rest of the sandwich. "They use bacon grease. Lots of it." "You want to make some coffee?" I asked. "Or I can do it if you like." "I'll do it. Dark Italian or breakfast?" "Italian," I said. "Where's your oatmeal?" "Done. Italian it is. I think I'll join you," he said. "I didn't know when you'd get home, and oatmeal tastes like glue when it's cold, so coffee will do just fine." At 58 years old, my father had the body of a 25-year-old. He ate the right things, worked out at least every other day, and his abs showed it. Me, I worked out too, and I love to run, and I play golf now and then too, mostly with August and a couple of his friends on Saturday mornings, so I do try to stay in shape, bacon grease aside. "How's Rose?" I asked, and I took a bite of the sandwich. "Rose is my stepmother, and an anomaly. She's 20 years younger than August, just 3 years older than me, and if you didn't know her or my father, you would be forgiven for thinking she was his trophy wife. I mean, my dad was a prime catch, a rich lawyer, well-respected in the community, but that's not her at all. She loves him almost to distraction, and I love her for it. And so does August." "She's well," he said. "Started working for some new charity this week. Something to do with kids, I think." I nodded and took another bite of my sandwich, but my mind was beginning to wander, and he could tell. "Where are you, Harry? What's on your mind?" I pursed my lips, sighed through my nose, then said, "What do you know about Frank Marsh?" He looked surprised at the question. "He just went down for 15 years, as I recall. Some kind of Ponzi scheme. What do you ask?" I ran into his daughter, Phoebe. "A nice kid, but I think she might be in all kinds of trouble. Big trouble." "She might be nice, but not Frank. He took his investors for something in excess of $100 million and is gone. They're looking for it, but I think it's probably a lost cause. So, what's it to you?" "Just something I'm working on." I filled him in what had happened to Phoebe at the Sorbonne and to the Stitch killing, all without going into the gory details. I wasn't sure I wanted to drag my father into what I knew could quickly become a huge mess. Hell, I wasn't even sure I should be digging into it. But I figured giving him the details couldn't hurt. So, you're working the case, then? That means you got your job back? He smiled. He'd always been one to brag about his son, the homicide detective, and sometimes he even had good reason to. I'd put a lot of bad guys away. Nah, I haven't got my old job back. Dad, I've decided to go into business for myself. I took a deep breath and continued, as a private investigator. He stared wide-eyed at me for a minute, then reached across the table, grabbed my hand, squeezed it, looked me squarely in the eye, and said, "Harry, that's terrific. It's the best thing you've ever done for yourself. What can I do to help? You're going to need clients. I can help you with that. I can send a lot of business your way. I can even use you myself." Hey, slow down, I said, laughing. I haven't even started yet. It's all still in the works. I'm thinking I might hire Ronnie. But he was no longer with me, not in spirit, anyway. He looked at his watch. Ronnie, huh? He said absently. That's good, Harry, very good. But we'll have to talk about it later. Right now, I've got to run. Can't keep the mayor waiting, now, can we? He looked me up and down and grimaced. Call me later. In the meantime, you might want to shower and change your clothes. You look and smell awful. He winked, stood up, walked around the table, slapped me on the shoulder, and walked out the door.
Chapter 7 I finished my sandwich and took his advice. The hot shower felt good, and I lingered in the water far longer than I should have, and then, well, the hot stream of water felt good, better than good, so I decided to follow Kate's lead. I put the stopper in the tub and added a splash of shampoo for a bubble bath. Okay, so it's not something I'd ever admit to, but it did loosen up the shoulders. After allowing myself a half hour of peace and quiet, I decided it was time to get to work. I hauled myself out of the tub, towelled myself dry, went into the bedroom to get dressed. All black seemed an appropriate attire for my new status, and kind of my own little nod to the dead kid, Stitch. So I grabbed a pair of black jeans, a black tee, and black boots. Stitch, I thought as I pulled on the boots. Poor kid. If only I had listened to him and left him alone, maybe he'd still be alive. There you go again, Harry, second-guessing yourself, and you know what that's worth. Not even a cup of coffee these days. If there's one thing I learned as a cop, it was that you can't let the crazy stuff get to you. Let it haunt you. But haunt me or not, nothing was going to keep me from taking down Goliath. I'll hunt that bastard until the day I die. I stood, checked myself in the mirror, turned away unimpressed, tried to shake off the black mood unsuccessfully. I made myself another cup of coffee, then went into my living room and flopped down in front of the great expanse of floor-to-ceiling windows, the main reason I bought the condo, and took in the magnificent view of the Tennessee River. Beautiful. Even in the rain. The surface of the water was still, broken only by the raindrops that turned the great river into a vast bed of nails. I grabbed my laptop from the side table and opened it. I'd planned to do some research, but the view through the windows had grabbed me and wouldn't let go. Intoxicating, it reminded me once again of how lucky I was to own the condo on Lakeshore Lane. I'd gotten it at one hell of a good price from an old duck who wanted to run off to Dove Mountain in Arizona. She claimed the dry climate there would help her bursitis. I think she even gave me a little discount on the place since I was a cop. I spent a small fortune renovating it just the way I wanted. Finally, with pen in hand and notepad in front of me,
I knuckled down and began my search for information about the Marsh case and human trafficking. Something inside me kept telling me that they, either one or both, were involved in Stitch's murder and Phoebe's abduction. That being so, I figured a history lesson was as good a place to begin my investigation. I am, after all, a private dick. The thought made me grin. I really was beginning to like the idea. I tapped the keys and Googled Frank Marsh. Up popped page after page after page devoted to the case. Much more information than I had time to go into in depth, but I managed to glean enough to confirm what August had told me. The man was a prime candidate for that new TV show, American Greed. And August was right. Most of the 103 million was still missing. There's one motive for Phoebe's kidnapping. It would be a great way to pressure Frank, if only he gave a damn. I moved on and Googled human trafficking. Again, I was gifted with more information than I could handle. I need to find someone who can handle all this crap for me. That's something to think about. I leaned back and stared unseeing out of the great window, thinking about Shady Tree, wondering if he was involved in some way. He wasn't a killer, at least not to my knowledge. And there's no way he would have killed his own kid, but he sure as hell was involved with a lot of people that wouldn't think twice about it. And what about that, I thought. If somebody'd killed my kid, I'd be all over him in a heartbeat. I need to talk to Shady, find out what the hell he's thinking. In the meantime, though, I called Ronnie. Kate's idea that I should hire him was a good one, and this was the right time for me to reel him in. "What the hell happened to you last night?" he asked when he picked up. "It was all over the news this morning about you and a dead teen. What happened at the laundromat? Tell me you didn't get into an argument over fabric softener." Between Ronnie and Kate, I got my fair share of ribbon. I was trying to find that girl, Phoebe. I found the kid at the laundromat. I was talking to him when some goon tried to warn me off with his fist. I dealt with him and then took the kid to Denny's for a chat. Well, that was the plan, but we were just getting out of the car when the goon reappeared. He must have followed us. He just walked up and shot the kid in the face. The poor kid died on the spot. Geez, so then what? Kate Gazzara came by and got me out from under the little rat Henry Finkel. Here's the thing, though. Do you remember that guy Shady Tree? I told you about him one time. It was his kid that died. I'm thinking somebody didn't want him talking to me. What about the goon? Did they catch him? Yeah, but the fat pig had an alibi. He claimed he was watching Mary Frickin' Poppins or some other garbage at the movies. Don't worry, though. I'll get the son of a bitch and make him pay. But that's not why I called you. You're not working, right?
Right. Why'd you ask?
A couple of things. Look, I'm at home. I have a proposition for you. Can you swing by, say, now? The line was quiet for a minute, then, proposition? What proposition? I'll tell you when you get here. Are you interested or not? Well, yes, but I haven't had a chance to shower. Let's say at an hour. 11. Make it 11:30. Is that okay?
Sure, I'll see you then.
Chapter 8. I figured it would be at least an hour and a half before Ronnie arrived, so rather than sit around and wait, I decided I had time to do a little recon, a drive over to the Rose Cafe and see what I could see. I slipped into my shoulder holster, checked the weapon, holstered it, then grabbed my black leather jacket and golf umbrella. I know, but it was still raining, and I sure as hell wasn't going to get drowned again. A couple of minutes later, I was out the door, in the rain, and running to the car, which was still parked out on the road. It was a short drive to East 3rd Street. Parking was easy at that time in the morning, and I found a spot at the curb close to the front entrance to the Rose Cafe. Sure enough, the sign had the same flower logo as Phoebe's drawing. Well, not really, but close enough. The image on the sign was a stylized white rose, a la the English War of the Roses. I guess the kid embellished it a little, I thought. No wonder Kate smiled when she saw it. I wasn't sure what I was looking for or what I might find, but my gut was telling me that there was something odd about the place. I pushed the door open and stepped inside. It wasn't exactly what I expected, if it was indeed a cover for some sort of illegal activity. It was, in fact, kind of nice, casual, with lots of wood, flat wood panels on the walls, heart pine floors, heavy wooden beams across the ceiling, and small, elegant round wooden tables with little red candles. As cafes go, it all seemed quite normal. Inviting. I grabbed a menu from beside the register and took a seat at a table off to the side by the window. As always, I sat with my back to the wall, facing the door, and with a good view out of the window. Paranoid? Better that than dead, right? The waitress was tall and not exactly pretty, but attractive enough and pleasant, with orangey-red hair, deep green eyes and long eyelashes that licked the top of her eyelids. I never saw anybody with eyelashes that long before. And they were real, too. She had a smile that lit up the room. "Hi, welcome to the Rose Cafe," she said as she set a glass of water down in front of me. "I'm Penelope. I haven't seen you around here before." She had a soft southern drawl. Probably from one of the Carolinas. Hi, Penelope. Yeah, it's my first time here. What's the best thing on the menu? She smiled and said, "The best thing on the menu is God's love." Uh-oh, here we go, I thought. She continued, "I can give you a giant helping of that." Coffee, please, I said, with a wry smile. She smiled back at me, nodded, and walked away. I pulled out my notepad and Phoebe Marsh's napkin, looked around, and began to make notes, trying to get a handle on the place. It wasn't working. As far as I could tell, the Rose Cafe was legit. Penelope returned with my coffee and was about to set it on the table when she saw the napkin, and her hand shook, slopping coffee over the edge of the cup. The look on her face was enough to tell me she recognized the drawing. She set the coffee cup on top of the napkin and pointedly glanced up at the security camera on the ceiling in the corner of the room, as if to warn me. "Our breakfast sandwiches are to die for," she said. "I'll have the cook make you a corned beef hash and egg to go." And she abruptly turned and walked away. What was that about? I thought as I watched her retreat into the kitchen. I took her hint, if that's what it was, and slid the napkin out from under the coffee cup and put it back in my pocket. The breakfast sandwich from the bagel shop I'd eaten earlier was still weighing heavily in my gut, but I figured another one couldn't hurt, so I went back to penning notes while I waited, but my heart was no longer in it. I was trying to figure out whether Penelope was on my side or not. The service was fast. Penelope returned with the sandwich before I'd even finished my coffee. "I know you must be in a hurry," she said pointedly. "That'll be $7 even." I could tell she wasn't going anywhere until I'd left. I dug into my pocket and fished out a 10. "Keep it," I said as I tossed it onto the table, grabbed the breakfast sandwich, and headed for the door. That was the first time I'd been 86 from a diner. Cafe my ass. I stood for a moment outside the cafe, looking around. I wasn't quite sure what to do next. It was still quite early, but it had stopped raining and the sun had finally showed itself. It was actually turning into a nice day. My car was parked in a two-hour zone, and I'd been in the restaurant only for maybe 10 minutes, so I stuffed the sandwich into my jacket pocket and took off walking down the street. I needed a quiet place to think, and I figured the Orchard Knob reservation would be deserted at that time of the morning. I turned right onto North Orchard Knob Avenue and walked another block to the park entrance. Any other day, I might have been more interested in the sights. The park was Ulysses S. Grant's headquarters during the Battle for Chattanooga in 1863. The view from the top of the hill is, well, worth the walk. That day, however, I was in no mood for sightseeing or contemplating the momentous events that had taken place there more than 150 years ago. I had too much on my mind. I walked to the top of the hill and sat down on the Illinois Monument and was soon lost in thought. Without really thinking about it, I took the sandwich from my pocket and began to peel back the wrapping. And then I saw the note. "Well, well, what do we have here?" I thought. And why am I not surprised? I set the sandwich down on the concrete, opened the note, and read, "Starbucks, Hamilton Place, 10 p.m. "What the hell is that about?" I thought. "She wants to talk? Why? She doesn't know me. Or does she? Maybe it's a setup." Whatever it was, it didn't matter. I knew right then that I was going to follow up on it. I folded the note and slipped it into the inside pocket of my jacket, along with Phoebe Marsh's napkin. I stood up, walked back to the park exit, tossed the uneaten sandwich into a trash can, and walked back to my car, and wouldn't you know it, there was a nasty little surprise waiting for me. Well, not so little. A Goliath, JoJo, J.J. James, was standing beside my car, knife in hand, and all four tires flat. "Oh, come on," I thought. Boy, was I ever pissed. Mess with me, but don't mess with my car. "Sorry about the tires," the brute said. "The knife just slipped in my hand." He turned away, laughing, and started down the street. I wasn't going to let him off that easy. Between the kid and the car, the son of a bitch was going down. I took off after him at a run, quick enough to surprise him, pulling my gun from its holster just as I reached him. "Yeah," I growled, "and I'm sorry about your friggin' kneecap. The gun just slipped out of my hand." And I swung the M&P 9 as hard as I could. The butt of the gun slammed into the side of his right knee. I heard something crack, and he went down like the sack of garbage that he was. Oh, he howled, grabbing the injured knee with both hands. "Freakin' hell! You crazy asshole! You just assaulted me! I'm calling the cops!" As he fumbled in his pocket, I slammed the butt of the gun into the back of his hand, bringing forth another string of howls and expletives. "Go ahead, you fat pig." I stood back and looked down at him. "I've got an alibi. I was at the frickin' movies with my friends watching Mary friggin' Poppins." I stepped forward again, jammed the barrel of the weapon into his nostrils as he lay there whimpering on the street in front of me. "Now, JoJo, you're going to tell me who you work for and why you kill that kid."
"Screw you, asshole."
I slapped his ear with the side of the barrel. He squealed like a stuck pig, and I shoved the gun back into his right nostril. "Let's try it again. Who do you work for and why did you kill that kid?"
"I don't know what you're talking about. I ain't killed nobody."
I smacked him on the ear again, and it started to bleed. He wiped his ear with his hand, looked at the blood on his palm, and passed out. "Some tough guy you are. Can't even stand the sight of your own blood." I gave him a couple of kicks in the ribs for good measure. Then I dialed AAA and asked for a tow truck and how long they'd be. They said they were light on work and that they'd be with me in a couple of minutes. After ending the call, I stared down at the unconscious goon. He wouldn't be talking any time soon. He was out cold, but at least I could get a good photo of him, and maybe there was a way to find out who he worked for. Thugs like him usually have street cred as well as a rap sheet, and I knew damn well that someone on the street knew who he was. All I had to do was find that someone. I snapped a picture of his ugly mug with my iPhone, gave him one last kick in the ribs to remember me by, and walked back to the car. Thoroughly pissed off, I leaned on the side, waiting for the tow truck. It arrived just before the goon woke up.
"Hey, is that guy all right?" the tow truck driver asked as he hooked up the car to haul it up onto the flatbed.
Just another street drunk passed out in the gutter.
"Geez, at this time in the morning?"
Goliath stirred, groaned, sat up and looked around, and it was with a certain amount of pleasure that I watched him writhe in pain from what I hoped was a broken rib. The fat bastard could barely breathe. I watched him from the cab of the truck as he rolled over and heaved himself up onto his knees. I rolled down the window.
"Hey, shithead," I shouted. "See you soon."
He glared up at me, bared his teeth, and gave me the finger. I knew right then that I hadn't seen the last of JoJo James.
Chapter 9. We dropped the car at the tire shop. They were swamped, told me they'd have it done by end of day if I was lucky. I told the guy in charge that wasn't going to work and that there was an extra 50 in it for him if I got the car back by 2 that afternoon. He told me he'd see what he could do. I could expect no more than that, so I tipped the truck driver a 20, and he was nice enough to give me a ride home. Ronnie was waiting for me at the door when I got there. It was 11:45.
Geez, I completely forgot about him.
"Hey, buddy, sorry, I forgot about you."
"Yeah," he said dryly, "I noticed. Where's your car?"
"That's a long story. Come on in."
We went inside, and I made coffee. I took a few minutes to fill him in on some of the details of what had happened. Then I steered the conversation to the business I had in mind.
"So listen," I said. "I was thinking that maybe, since I'm not working and kind of at a loose end, I'd start my own business, open a private investigation agency. What do you think? Finding Phoebe Marsh would be my first case."
"Oh, that's funny." The laughter in his eyes told me he didn't think I was serious.
"Phoebe Marsh," he said, "didn't you forget something?"
I shook my head and sighed.
What did I forget, Ronnie?"
"Her dad's in jail, probably for the rest of his life. So who's going to pay you?"
"Yeah, well, I don't need money. You know that. And maybe that's why she left her poker money on the table."
"Hell, Ronnie, I don't care. I don't need a reason. Someone snatched her. I'm going to find her. That's it."
"Wow, you're serious," he said.
"I am. Look, I don't know squat about setting up a new business, so here's the proposition. I'd like you to come on board and handle that kind of stuff for me. Set it up. Everything. What do you say?"
He frowned, serious, thoughtful, then said,
"You want me to be your business partner?
Harry, I don't have that kind of money."
He might not have the money, but I did. My mother was old Chattanooga money, big money. Unfortunately, she died of cancer when I was 15, but before she did, she set up a trust for me. I won't tell you how much, but when I turned 25, it was like I won the frickin' lottery. Twice.
Anyway, you don't need any money, Ronnie, and I don't need a partner. I've got all the cash we'll ever need, and then some. I just don't know how to set it all up. The licenses, taxes, accounting, business plan, all that stuff.
I'd like you to come work for me, be my business manager, run the office, maybe get a secretary and some other staff, investigators.
I like secretaries.
I mean for work. He laughed and stroked his chin as if he had a beard, picked up his coffee, raised the mug in the air, and said, "Why not?" And we drank to it. "When do I start? What's the pay? Do I get an office?"
"You start right now.
As to your salary, we'll discuss that later, but don't worry. I'll make it worth your while."
"Do you get an office?"
"Sure. Just as soon as we get an office. That's your first job after you register the company, Harry Stark Investigations."
"I like that."
"Has a nice ring to it. Tell me about what you want for a location."
"The office? I'm thinking somewhere nice, downtown, near the courts and the attorney's offices. That's where it all happens, where the work is. I also thought that maybe you could handle white-collar crime investigations."
I smiled. He was going to be very useful. "But first things first, I need some help with this Phoebe Marsh case."
"What kind of help?"
"If what that kid Stitch told me before he died is true, that her father sold her, I need to find out who he sold her to. I'm thinking trafficking, human trafficking, sex, prostitution. If so, drugs are probably involved as well. All of that means there's an organization behind it, organized crime. I need to find out who, what, and where. I think I stumbled into one of their businesses this morning, the Rose Cafe on East 3rd, and freaked out a waitress."
"You have a tendency to do that to people. Did you threaten the shooter?"
"Be serious, Ronnie." I reached into my pocket. "She saw this on the table," I said, laying the napkin in front of him. "She went into some kind of tailspin and rushed me out of there with a sandwich I didn't order, along with a note hidden inside the wrapping paper." I showed him the note.
"You're not going to do this. Meet her, are you?"
he asked. "Are you kidding? Of course I am. Absolutely. But what? It's what I do. Investigate. Ask questions. Of course I'll meet her. Maybe she has a story to tell. Maybe she knows what happened to Phoebe. Hell, maybe she knows who's running whatever it is that's... Maybe you should come with me."
"You think?"
"Well, maybe I will."
I checked my watch. It was almost 2 o'clock.
"Yeah, well," I said, "I need to go get my car. You want to take me, or do I need to get a taxi?" He said he would take me. Ronnie's car was a classic, a beauty, a pristine 1980 Mercedes 280 SL. It was his baby, and she rode like a dream. Anyway, I had him drop me off at the tire shop and send him on his way to start working on putting my new business together. Fortunately, my car was ready, and 10 minutes later I drove out of the shop on 4 brand-new Michelin Pilot Sports with my wallet, 750 big ones lighter, plus the $50 tip for the speedy turnaround. "Damn, that 8 is coming out of Goliath's hide," I thought, gritting my teeth. But that would have to come later. At that point, all I wanted to do was go home and do some thinking.
Chapter 10. I parked on the street in front of my condo and exited the car. And once again, I had a creepy feeling that all was not right. I shook it off, mounted the front steps, and pointed my key to where the lock used to be. The door frame around the lock was shattered, and the door was slightly ajar. "Ah, shit," I thought savagely. "Not again." Instinctively, I reached for my weapon. Gently, I pushed the door open, took a step back, and waited, listening. Nothing. I took a deep breath and stepped inside. All was quiet, but all was not well. My condo had been trashed. Stepping around flipped-over chairs, trying not to step on scattered papers, picking up slashed sofa cushions, I made my way carefully into the living room and went to the wall safe. I pressed the hidden button on the frame. There was a click, and the picture swung open an inch. I opened it the rest of the way and was relieved to find the contents were intact, except for my spare weapon, a twin of the Smith & Wesson 9mm semi-automatic I still held in my hand. Oh, shit, I thought, that's all I need. Whoever it was that had broken into my home was long gone. I went downstairs to the basement, to my office, and looked around. Jeez, what a frickin' mess. I shoved the gun back into its holster and returned to the kitchen, sorted through the mess, found what I needed, and made some coffee. That done, I went to the living room and flopped down on the couch in front of the big windows. It was starting to rain again. Damn, is it ever going to stop? I stared out into the mist. The far riverbank was barely visible. I sipped a little coffee, placed the cup down on the side table, and in what seemed only minutes, I was at peace. I woke a couple of hours later with a crick in my neck and a pain under my arm where the M&P-9 was pressing against my bare skin, and it was still raining. I checked my watch. It was almost 7 o'clock, and I felt like shit. I looked around the room, took in the mess, sighed, rose, and headed for the shower. 20 minutes later, and for some reason feeling better than I had in a week, I set about trying to figure out what else my intruders had stolen. Surprise, surprise. Nothing seemed to be missing except for my gun, Phoebe's napkin, and the note from the sandwich wrapper. Well, there goes any chance I might have had of getting prints, I thought. I should have turned them over to Kate yesterday. Well, at least I have photos of them. I made more coffee, toasted a bagel, slathered it with cream cheese, and texted Ronnie. I asked him if he'd found us an office, and if he had, was it in a secure building? The next message went to Kate. I told her that my place had been trashed, that I was okay, but the napkin and wrapper were missing. I figured it would be a good idea to keep her in the loop. I took my coffee and bagel to my office, shook my head at the mess, then fired up my laptop, found the number for a local security company, and made a note of it. No way was this going to happen again. I sat for a minute, trying to get my head around the mess I'd gotten myself into. I couldn't. None of it made any sense. I shook my head, changed gears, and thought again about Goliath. Jojo? Nah, I don't think so. Goliath suits me just fine, I thought, as the image of his exploding face when I sank my fist into his gut flashed through my mind, and I couldn't help but smile. I called Kate. Hey, Velda, I said when she answered. Have you got a minute? I have some questions. I heard her laugh. Sure, she said, but first, tell me what happened at the condo. Are you okay? Oh, yeah, I'm fine, but the place is trashed, and they took my spare M&P-9 along with Phoebe's note and one from the cafe. They were both on my desk. Geez, Harry, that's not good. Your weapon? You'll need to file a report. No, I'll file it right now. If it's used to commit a crime, you need to be covered. Give me the serial number. I read it off to her, then said, Kate, I got to get to the bottom of this, and I have almost nothing to go on. I have a meeting tonight with the waitress who handed me the note. Maybe she has some answers. Other than that, there's just the big guy, Joseph James, Jojo. What do you have on him? He's a nobody, Harry. He has a rap sheet a mile long, but it's all for petty crime, and he's been arrested several times for assault and extortion. Seems he works his muscle for anyone willing to pay him. Here's the thing, though. It's all old stuff. He's been clean for almost 3 years. Either he's turned the page and is going straight, which we know he hasn't, or someone is looking after him. Yeah, I said. That's what I figured. But who? He's an animal in high profile.
He'd be more trouble than he's worth.
I don't know, Harry. Tell me about this meeting. You want me to come along with you?
No, but thanks for the offer. If she knows anything, I need to talk to her, and she interrupted me.
And I don't like your methods, right?
I smiled. She knew me better than I knew myself.
Oh, come on, Kate. When did I ever put the screws to a woman?
Never that I know of, but there's always a first time. And you're out on your own now. No oversight. No one to answer to. Except me, if you break the law.
Me? Break the law? Never.
Okay, I gotta go. I'll see you later.
Maybe. Just be careful, Harry.
She disconnected.
A basic Google search for James's name turned up nothing, which told me that whoever he was working for knew what they were doing. I sat for a long moment, staring at the screen, willing it to tell me something, anything, but it remained silent. I sighed. I was pretty good at tracking people, but if I was going to make this PI thing work, I figured I'd need someone a whole lot better than me, and I thought I knew exactly who that someone was. I tapped the keyboard, found what I was looking for, closed the laptop, grabbed my coat and weapon, and headed out the door. It was almost 8. 5 minutes later, I was on my way to the only 24/7 internet cafe in town. Yeah, it was Friday evening, and the place would undoubtedly be busy, but that didn't matter. I knew they'd be there. They always were. The hardcore computer geeks with the glazed eyes, sallow skin, and brains that thought only in binary code. With any luck, the guy I had in mind would be one of them. The streets were quiet, which was good after the hustle the past few days. It seemed like things had been going nonstop since I picked up the kid, Phoebe Marsh, in the rainstorm. The quiet solitude as I drove through the rain gave me a chance to think. Why Phoebe? Did her old man really sell her? Maybe he did. They sure as hell went to a lot of trouble to grab her that night. I guess it could be they had an investment in her. If he didn't, there had to be another reason. But what? And who the hell is this Goliath guy working for, and why did he slash my freaking tires? It couldn't have been just for the hell of it. Maybe they were trying to keep me there at the Rose Cafe. And what about that Penelope? Will she really turn up at Starbucks, or was she part of a trap that just sent me up? Oh, yeah. Whether she turns up tonight or not, I need to talk to her again. The blue light of the sign appeared on my left, snapped me out of my thoughts. I made a U-turn and parked in front of the blue tornado. Who the hell thought that one up, I wonder? I remember the place from a couple of years ago when it had been a sleazy bar come whorehouse. The city had shut them down, and not because it was a health hazard, which it was, but because two people had died right there, out front, during a couple of drive-by shootings. The heavy wooden door with a peephole in situ still smelled a little of cigarettes and booze. I pushed the door open and stepped inside, and again the twin stale smells assailed my olfactory system. Ugh. It was dark inside and must have been about as close to heaven as a geek could expect to get. Dim blue lighting and little else but the glow from a dozen or so computer screens. It wasn't as busy as I'd expected. Just 5 customers, all of them under 18, I guessed. Fortunately, one of them was the kid I was looking for. I'd gotten a break at last. Hey, kid, you got a minute? Tim Clark, the kid from the poker game at the Sorbonne, just about leaped out of his skin. He jumped up from his seat and threw his body in front of the computer screen. The kid's up to no good. What? He stuttered, wide-eyed, terrified. Hey, it's okay. Calm down. We met at the poker game at the Sorbonne, remember? Yeah, sure, he said, with his back still to the screen. He was pretty nervous, which told me he was either surfing porn or hacking, and I was betting on hacking. Either way, he was just what I needed. I need a minute. Is that okay? He nodded, but didn't move away from the screen. You remember the girl?